Welcome to the Watching World Podcast. I'm Les, and he's Ed. And Ed is back in the saddle, sitting over there, because we are in the middle of the series, Knowing What You Believe and Why You Believe It. Ed, I got to tell you, before we jump in, I continue to hear great things from people. I was serving last night at Fusion, and a gentleman came up and said, man, I love the podcast. I'm listening to them right now, and they're listening to all the different ones. And I got a great comment. For the first time, I got a great comment that I didn't expect. This gentleman said, why aren't they longer? Let's go. They need them to be longer.
What, are you trying to get us in trouble or something?
No, absolutely not. We're just going to have to adjust a little bit.
Well, we could go longer, but you never have food here. So I don't know. I can't last that long.
You know, I don't know what it is. I am becoming very, very forgetful. And I love to eat. We both exercise, but we also love to eat. So I guess we're playing for par, not birdies. So
yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, well, listen. Welcome to the Watching World Podcast, everybody. And welcome to Knowing What You Believe and Why You Believe It. This is a series featuring Ed Croteau. He teaches FSC University on Sundays at 9:30 here at Abundant Life in the main building in room 1024. You can go to fsc.life. You can go to his YouTube channel or that YouTube channel as well. It's based on Hebrews 11:1, and you need to go to this class. I go, my son goes, and it's growing, and I love the fact that it's growing. And man, you talk about meat and potatoes. Sometimes it's just meat and potatoes. Just forget the potatoes. I just want the meat. But it's just so good. I've learned so much in the time that I've been here in these months in the room and studying it. Well, first the old room, now the new room, and we're going to outgrow that pretty soon, aren't we?
There's standing room only now.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. There's no chairs.
I love that. I'll just have to wear comfortable shoes.
We'll start charging money. So we can get some cash involved here.
Well, we'll donate it.
Okay.
We'll just donate it. Okay. Well, so before we begin today is four in a 9-part series of Knowing What You Believe and Why You Believe It. The first podcast was Understanding Our Culture. We took a look back to Rome. Podcast two, A Worldview, the religious, cultural, and philosophical worldviews that are out there today, helping you kind of figure all those things out. And then the last one we did, How Do People Decide What Is True? And if you didn't hear that one and you're jumping to this one, take a pause, hit the pause button, and go back, start at one, because you want these in order. I mean, yes, if you don't have time, Agreed. Go ahead and listen to it.
Agreed.
But having these in order are the best way to go. But regardless of that, we're going to jump into podcast four of this series, Rhetoric. How do we persuade others to believe a truth claim? I know how you do it in my house full of boys, whoever talks the loudest. Yeah. But it doesn't work that way here. We want to really understand this, and Ed's going to bring this to us. So on the piece of rhetoric, first of all, what is rhetoric? We hear that word, Ed, thrown around a lot,
right.
but what is rhetoric? What does that mean?
Let me start with something that's really interesting. This happens to me all the time. People will say, well, Ed, when you give me all this evidence, when you show how robust the Christian worldview is, why doesn't everybody believe it? If there's that much evidence, why don't they believe it?
That's a great point.
And what I always tell people is people aren't persuaded to believe something based on facts and evidence. That rarely happens. People usually are drawn to people that they admire, you know, people in groups that they have a trust built. They'll actually believe something from someone who's a good friend, even if it's not true. So this
idea— At least they'll entertain it more. That,
absolutely. It happens all the time.
Sure.
You can see sports. You know, you can argue for days. Why do people really feel confident the Chiefs will win the Super Bowl? Because they love the Chiefs, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you step back as an analyst and you look at it a different way just based on facts, you may come to a different conclusion.
Right.
Right. So rhetoric is really a unique form of persuasion. It really started with Aristotle. You can go back to about 320, 330 BC, where he created a document. He wrote a manuscript called On Rhetoric, and he talked about rhetoric being an art form of arguing or debating that you use to persuade an audience.
Okay, so you're telling me that debating isn't just, I believe, you don't, let's hash this thing out. It's called an art form.
That's right.
There's an art to this.
Oh, absolutely. If you remember, as an example, the O.J. Simpson trial,
mm-hmm.
when they had it on TV, it was amazing. Bring the cameras right in there.
Yeah.
And there was a scene in there where the attorney, Johnny Cochran, actually had O.J. Simpson try on a glove.
Oh, I remember that well.
Right. Well, that had nothing to do with data or anything. That was meant for an impact, right?
Absolutely,
To make an impact. So you'll find this very often in court cases. People just don't, the defense attorney, the prosecuting attorney, they just don't stand up there and dribble off a bunch of facts. They're going to use rhetoric. They're going to try to persuade the jury to their way of thinking with more than just facts.
Interesting. That's amazing. And so there are three forms of persuasion, right? That can build a worldview. Let's talk about those.
Yeah. And just so we all have context, Les, when you said people, you know, the best way to approach this is to go through each of these podcasts in series because we're building a case. Last time we talked about how do people decide what's true. Mm-hmm. We talked about things like subjective views versus objective, perspectivism, pragmatic people, right? All these different ways people kind of decide. Well, this one is about how people are persuaded, right? Mm-hmm. So Aristotle came up with three forms. His first one is called logos. That should be very familiar to Christians. It's right there in the first chapter of John. In the beginning was the logos, right? So logos is literally means evidence-based. It's about facts. That's what people can use to try to convince someone is you literally use the facts of reality. The second one is called ethos. Well, ethos is when you'll bring someone who has a great deal of experience in an area or someone who is very charismatic and people are drawn to him, or maybe it'll be someone who people just respect. I mean, if you look at our culture, I always find it amazing they'll have very famous sports heroes on TV telling us about moral issues.
Mm, isn't that interesting? Because, you know, I want to base my whole life's morals on what a professional athlete thinks. He said sarcastically, of course.
Yeah, exactly. One of the pictures I use, it's a ride, is if you go back to the 1940s, 1950s, there's a picture where it shows doctors, surgeons smoking a cigarette.
He's got his white coat on.
He's got his white coat on.
Got his arm crossed in front of him looking all doctorly. And he's got a cigarette in his hand.
Yes, and the caption is, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Great.
So they use doctors to try to promote cigarette smoking. Well, logos since then has come up that pretty much negates that type of ethos. Mm-hmm. But ethos is not a bad thing. Pastor Phil uses it all the time. People look at him and think they respect him. They look at who he is. So his opinion carries weight.
It does.
Right?
And so it should.
Right.
It can be subjective, right? But yet when someone's proven over time,
right,
a little bit, then obviously you can see that they know what they're doing. They speak with passion. They speak with that ethos.
Yeah, and in our church too, especially with Paradigm and a lot of young couples, they're encouraged to seek out godly couples that have been married a long time to get advice on marriage.
Absolutely.
And I always tell the couples, I said, which would you rather have if you want to understand marriage more deeply before you get married? A good book that you read together on marriage, or a couple that's been married 40 or 50 years that are godly, you respect, to sit down with them and hear what they think.
Right, and they're going to tell them the truth, you know, the highs and lows and how you get through it and all those things.
That's ethos.
Right. That's good.
Okay.
And number three?
Number three is a riot because this is the big one that everybody, this is what's happening to our culture right now. It's called pathos.
No, be careful what you say here. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt my feelings.
Yes, I think... Well, these podcasts aren't meant to be nice and cheery. You know, we're going to hit you with reality. Pathos is a word that really means, is where we get our word pathetic from. It's feelings. It's emotion-based. When you're sitting there watching TV and a commercial comes on and it shows animals out in the cold with a chain on and, you know, they say they're freezing and then they ask for $19 a month, they're appealing to your emotions. That's what they're trying to draw you to. Mm-hmm. When you see... Black Lives Matter sometimes in these protests, and the sign they say hang up, it says, I can't breathe. And it's going back to George Floyd. That's an appeal to your emotions because of what happened to George Floyd.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
Pathos is very, very powerful, and they use it all the time. Putin is using it right now.
Yeah, you can see I saw that very thing this morning. Sure. Are there any examples in the Bible where we see examples of pathos?
Oh, all the time. It's pathos, if you want to get a really more legalistic definition, it would be where the speaker is really appealing to an audience's hopes, emotions, their dreams, your future state. Martin Luther King would be a great example of someone who was an expert at pathos. Mm-hmm. But the greatest expert is Jesus Christ.
Right.
If you go to the internet and you type in greatest speeches of all time, of history, the Sermon on the Mount is number one.
That's a pretty good one.
It's number one.
Yeah, it should be.
Right after the Gettysburg Address, the letter from Birmingham Jail, some of these things from Martin Luther King. So it's right up there. Well, in, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus Christ is literally, when he says things like, blessed are the peacemakers, right? He's appealing to a future state if you were to adopt and follow what he's saying. He's painting a scenario of a positive future based on following a course of action that he proposes.
Right, and that's in Matthew 5 for those that are like, okay, where is that? I encourage people that when you listen to these podcasts, have your Bible right there.
Yeah.
Have it with you. And when we mention scripture, which again, these podcasts exist to glorify God, and we can't do that without scripture understanding him. And so make sure you have that. And you'll find that on the Sermon on the Mount, the opening of it is right at the beginning of Matthew 5. So make sure you go check that out as well.
Let me add to that at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, because it's long from 5 to 7. It's really interesting. At the end, it says this. In Matthew 7, verses 28, 29, it says, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught as one having authority, not as the scribes. That's ethos.
He's using it all.
He's using it all. When
he is the evidence.
Well, he's the creator. He's the logos. He
right.
is the one who gives us the mind to be able to do these things.
Right.
When at the end of John chapter 8, when they catch that woman in adultery and they bring that woman to him and they want to try to trick him. When it's all said and done, they say, those who heard Jesus being convicted by their conscience went out one by one, the oldest to the youngest. It's ethos again, where his authority and the way he convicted them overrode what they were trying to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so the best explanation for the origin of the universe. We see these all the time, and I love on YouTube, seeing some of the debates you do, and I love in class when we get to watch some video clips and all that. Listen, no offense, man. I love to hear you speak. I could hear you talk all day, but every once in a while when you pop those videos in, I get pretty excited
too. Oh, they're crazy, aren't they?
They're fantastic,
right?
And they're crazy, and they're, I cannot believe that that point of view is coming out of a human being when the evidence is right there. But again, you know, that it's, I let the experts that can debate and use logos, ethos, pathos to do all that. And so what about those three? Logos, ethos, pathos in demonstrating God as the best explanation for the origin of the universe.
Well, I'm stumped from it. You actually are very good at this. You are. You don't give yourself credit. Just running these podcasts and working in Fusion, the ability to persuade people towards your point of view, right? The best way to do it is to be passionate about what you believe is true.
Absolutely.
And that is what is a distinguishing characteristic of a Christian, passionate for Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And it's, that goes back to, it's a gift from God. Absolutely. There's nothing, I just showed up one day, trust me, because back in the days of doing speaking engagements before I got into ministry stuff, it was difficult. And all I could think of was how bad I was going to be. But again, just staying obedient, God allowed me to work through that. But, you know, again, in the church, you know, you see Pastor Phil, he's good. Chad Glover is so good at that. And we've got so many guys. And then hearing you on Sunday as well, it's awesome because you have great emotion to go with your intellect. You help people reason through it. And one of the things I love about you and hate about you at the same time, I don't really hate it, but you know, I'm just saying this, is that you'll keep asking questions until one of us gets it right. And I love that about you because it forces us out of our comfort zone. So I don't really hate it. I love it and I love it, but you get what I'm saying. And so I appreciate it, but you have that same gift, my friend.
That's why I gave you a compliment because I was hoping you'd give me one. So
well,
apparently
I saw the lure hopping on the side over here.
Yeah,
I bit right into it. Okay, best explanation for the origin of the universe.
Right.
For God's the one that created it. Let's use these three.
This is really important to talk about. First of all, it's really funny. I remember talking to Luke Crabb and I said, hey, I'm pretty excited. I'm actually teaching a logic class on how to grow as a Christian. And he looked at me funny. He goes, logic class, right? So most people don't realize how important it is to think through things. So when I ask people, well, what's logic? Right? It's like asking, why are you a Christian? Everybody like stops for a minute and they think, I don't know. It's pretty simple. It's the art and science of reasoning to discover truth. So again, we have logos, ethos, pathos. So we're going to talk logos for a minute with the origin of the universe because it's an argument that cannot be disputed. It doesn't matter if people don't like it. The bottom line is logically with data, it's true. And here's the argument. It's a completely, we call it deductive. It's formal logic and again, comes from Aristotle. All right, so you have these things called premises. A premise means literally a statement you make that's true and it conforms to reality. So when we talk about the origin of the universe, premise one, whatever begins to exist has a cause. So everybody stops a minute and goes, all right, is that true? I think so. I don't know of anything that comes into existence that something else didn't cause it.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means is it's called a priori or self-evident. Everybody understands it. It's like me saying, less is a man. Can be confusing nowadays, but basically, less is a man, everybody goes, got it, okay? So premise one, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Now, if everybody agrees it's true, you're allowed to move to premise two.
Right.
Premise two, the universe began to exist. We know that now. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
We have the data.
That's right. Proven fact.
Proven fact. So now it's self-evident. Everybody knows it. So now you take premise one and premise two and you say, therefore, the universe began to exist. So if we have whatever begins as this has a cause, the universe began to exist, we can then say the universe has a cause. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now the universe has a cause. And then a Christian says, the most reasonable explanation, the best explanation for the cause of the universe has to be something outside the universe. It can't be within the universe because it's part of the universe. Our best explanation is Genesis 1:1. God exists.
Where to go. Yeah, you know right where to go for that one.
It's easy. So there's an argument can't be argued. People can try, but it's that simple. Yeah. That's called logos. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. On a silly way to do it, we can do this all day long with things. An example would be premise one, people wanting whiter teeth use this toothpaste. Premise two, I want whiter teeth. Conclusion, I will use this toothpaste.
Right.
I mean, it's this simple.
It is.
So with the universe, that is a deductive, logical, simple argument that really can't be argued because of the facts. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay. So that's logos.
Okay.
Now, here's what's interesting. Let's stick with the universe and look at ethos. So with ethos, what happens is you have debates like Veritas forums, and you'll have non-believing skeptics come in. They'll debate a Christian on where did the universe come from? And what they'll do, obviously, is find a big-name person. So it's going to be ethos.
Right.
So the Christian usually comes in and says, well, actually, we've got, like I do, we have 9 facts that absolutely support the fact that the universe had a beginning. And we can use ethos on experts. So one of my favorites is this guy, Dr. Robert Jastrow, who wrote a book called God and the Astronomers. Now, here's a guy who was head of NASA. He was the Goddard Institute for NASA. He literally run the Space Institute. He was an agnostic. He wasn't a Christian, but he was honest. And here's what he said. For the scientist who has lived out his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He's about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself up over the final rock, he's greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. All right, this is his... He's being honest. He goes,
yeah.
And he's saying the reason is Genesis 1:1 is the best explanation for where the universe came from. And then he makes this quote. This is how life works with rhetoric. Here's what he says. It turns out that the scientist behaves the way the rest of us do when our beliefs are in conflict with the evidence. We become irritated. We pretend the conflict doesn't exist, or we paper it over with meaningless phrases.
Mm.
So this is what happens when people are confronted with logos, with logic. They'll use ethos. Well, let me find an expert who will be willing to say something different.
Right. You find that in courtrooms a lot too, right?
There
it's always
go.
The opposing, he's going to present this. So I'm going to find, there might be 17 of them that say that's not true. I'm going to find the one that says it does.
Yes.
And call him the expert witness.
Those always crank me up. We'll bring in a forensic psychologist and they'll explain why the symptoms of the defendant point to the fact he must be guilty. And if he has a big enough name and if people respect him, that's ethos.
It's going to carry more weight.
It's going to carry more weight.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
One of my favorites on this is this guy. I think he's just a riot. His Professor Robert Griffiths. He's at Carnegie Mellon. He said, when it comes to physics and the universe, origin of the universe, he said, if we need an atheist for a debate, we go to the philosophy department. The physics department isn't much use.
Mm.
What he's saying is, the data is so strong that why bother arguing it?
Yeah.
So there's two examples. And then you have plenty of world-renowned scientists coming up. You've got Sir Frederick Hoyle. You've got Jastrow, I talked about, George Smoot, the 2006 Nobel Prize winner. They're all saying, hey, guys, if we're going to be honest, the best explanation is Genesis 1-1. So that's logos and ethos.
Yep.
You want to get into pathos a little
bit? Let's do it. We need to.
All right, pathos is very interesting. I used what I'm about to read you guys, I used in a debate. You can see it online on my site between the local Kansas City Atheist Coalition and myself, basically. And we were talking about this idea of why origins matter. So we're talking again about the origin of the universe. And I said, okay, so let's compare and contrast the difference between Christianity and naturalistic atheistic thinking. All right, step one, Christianity. You're a special creation of a good and all-powerful God. That's pathos. It's like, wow. The naturalistic counter. You're a descendant of a tiny cell of protoplasm that showed up 3.5 billion years ago, which is what you're taught in school a lot of times with evolutionary thinking.
Yeah, I remember even as old as I am reading that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two for Christianity, you are created in his image with capacities to think, feel, and worship. The counter in naturalism, you're the blind and random product of time, chance, and natural forces. You're a grab bag of atomic particles.
I can't even fathom that thought.
All right, see what's happening to you?
Yeah.
It's pathos again.
Yeah, it is. It's strumming the particular string there.
Yep. Number three in Christianity, you differ from animals not simply in degree, but in kind. Not only is your kind unique, but you are unique among your kind. Each of us is unique. The naturalistic view, you are a purely biological entity, different only in degree, but not in kind, from a microbe, virus, or amoeba.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
Number four, Christianity. God loves you so intensely, he's desired your companionship and has a plan for your life. Naturalistic view, you exist on a tiny planet in a minute solar system in an empty corner of a meaningless universe.
Wow. That's pretty dark.
There's a great video I show in class that shows Jim Carrey giving out Golden Globe Awards, and he talks about this and makes a joke of it. It's very impactful to see what happens when you accept this worldview.
Mm.
And then the fifth one for Christianity, God gave the life of his son so that you might spend eternity with him. Naturalistic view, you have no essence beyond your body, and at death, you will cease to exist. Number six, and the last one for Christianity, if you are willing to accept his gift of salvation, you can be his child. Naturalistic view, you came from nothing and you're going nowhere.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is literally, it's meant to strike people. And when I presented this and went through it, oh man, people were yelling at me like I'm crazy. I'm saying, no, this is common sense and you know it. Bertrand Russell, one of the most famous analytical philosophers in history, he was an atheist, strong atheist. He said this. He said, we're a product of causes that had no provision of the end they were achieving. That's the origin of our growth. Our hopes and fears, our loves and beliefs are all but the outcomes of the accidental collocation of atoms.
That's an interesting accident.
Now, this is a professor at a university at the time. All of our labors, our devotion, all of our geniuses are destined to the extinction in the vast death of the solar system. And here's how he concluded this. Only within the scaffolding of these truths, only within the firm foundation of unyielding despair can the soul's habitation be safely built.
Wow.
He's trying to tell you that when you adopt this view, you can be encouraged and be brave and face a world where you know you're meaningless and going nowhere.
Right. This is the best it's going to get, and it's over soon.
Anybody sit at their dinner table with their kids and go, hey, I just want to remind you, you know, yeah, I know you're going to school today, but it really doesn't matter. And one day you'll be worm food.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
This is the pathos view without any data to support it.
Wow. Well, this is amazing. All right, let's tidy it up. Let's just do the recap. What are the three?
Okay, so we've got logos.
Mm-hmm.
We've got ethos. We've got pathos. Logos is logic and data. Ethos is expert opinion or charisma. And pathos is appealing to your emotions and dreams and hopes. And they're used to persuade.
It's right? All rhetoric.
It's rhetoric. Mm. That's what people do.
Very interesting stuff. Well, Ed, thanks again. We're not even halfway done. We won't be halfway done until we're halfway through the middle of the next one, which is podcast 5 in the series, Knowing What You Believe and Why You Believe It. And the next one, we're going to talk about how can people test for what is true.
Yeah. Now we want to literally in the next one go from, okay, how do I decide what's true? How can I persuade? But time out. How do I test it to see what's ultimately really true?
That's good. Well, you can come to Ed's class on Sundays, 9:30 in room 1024 here in the main building at Abundant Life. It is fsc.life is the website, but FSC University is Faith, Substance, and Evidence. Kind of saw a little bit of that right through this whole podcast and what we're seeing all through here. When you go to the YouTube channel, check out some great videos, but please hit subscribe. Make sure you subscribe so we can continue to get that following there. And we love the fact that they're standing room only in the class. Let's keep that going.
I really want to build a subscription so we can get it outreach more and more across the country, outside of just Lisa.
Yeah, well, it's across the world.
Yep.
God's absolutely. A big God. Let's roll.
Absolutely. Last comment on this. It's interesting. On my website, I actually have a following of people in Nepal, UK, people in Japan, a lot of people who listen into this, Iraq. So it's a good thing. It's easy to reach people with this.
Yeah. FSC.life is a place to go. Again, go to YouTube. So make sure you check it out. Ed, thanks for being here. I love it.
Thanks, brother. Good to do it again.
All right. Awesome, man. Well, stay tuned for podcast number 5 in the series, Knowing What You Believe and Why You Believe It. And then anything about Abundant Life. If you have next steps, if you want to know about ministries, if you need someone to talk to, know about counseling, anything that is Abundant Life, just go to livingproof.co. For Ed Croteau, I'm Liz Norman. Thanks for joining us today on the Watching World Podcast.